Welcome back to BSA by Design, a podcast about transforming healthcare, educational, and research facilities through expert design and insight. I'm your host, Brian Moore. And in this episode, Tim Spence, the CEO of BSA, joins us to discuss the future of healing. Tim was our first guest way back on episode 2 and joined us again on episode 16 on the client's best interests. Tim has graduated from the University of Southern California with a Bachelor of Architecture degree. He holds several licenses and certifications, including AIA, FACHA, NCARB, LEED AP, BD plus C, and his Lean Six Sigma Yellow Belt. Tim has been wearing dual hats for the better part of the past year, serving as BSA's interim healing director, which, given his background in the healing market, has lended to some excellent insights as to where he sees the market headed in the future. Welcome back to the show, Tim. It's great to have you back.
Thanks for having me back, Brian. I was just going to say real quick, it's unbelievable that you have pumped out 30 of these conversations. Congrats on that.
Yeah, I meant to say something when our one-year anniversary came up back in November, but I forgot to. So yes, it's been awesome doing this. And you were guest number one, so it's kind of fitting that we're bringing you back here at the start of a new year to talk. We've had the privilege of working together on BSA's leadership team, and I've been able to witness you wearing some dual hats recently as CEO and our interim healing practice director for a little while, and have heard you talking about some really interesting things coming in the future in the healing market. So I thought it'd be a fun conversation to dive a little bit deeper into that and talk about the future of healing. To start off, my first question is, what are some of the most significant changes you've observed in the healthcare facility design area?
Well, first, just thanks a lot for letting me be on again. And
yeah,
this balancing of these roles, it's been both challenging and rewarding. You kind of watched me walk through that. It allows me to dive deep into the strategic direction of BSA while still staying close to what's a rapidly evolving market. So your question is a really big one. And honestly, we could spend the rest of the podcast on this, I'm sure. But just to keep it more focused, I'll touch on three things that I've seen, and I think they're pretty exciting. There's the first one is this shifting site of care. And this is a really kind of an old idea, but it's something that I think is taking on a different tact with technology. And there's this immense pressure on healthcare to be both cost effective and highly efficient. So we're trying to push costs down, quality up, and we're already familiar with this idea when it comes to healthcare professionals working at the top of their license, ensuring, for instance, that doctors focus on what they can do while delegating other tasks to qualified nurses or other professionals. So it's kind of the same thing with healthcare buildings need to operate at the top of their license as well. For example, we know the emergency department isn't the right place for a common cold. It's too costly and resource intensive. So this has led to this shift inside of care where we're moving outside the hospital, whatever is possible, into a less acute, less costly environment, and even to virtual care platforms. And I think that's where the exciting piece is that BSA has worked on two major systems to develop outpatient strategy and corresponding prototypes. And I just see this continuing. So that's kind of the first one. The second one that I want to talk about is technology augmentation. And we're seeing this with staffing shortages that are critical for healthcare. Emerging technologies like AI and robotics are stepping in to handle repetitive and mundane tasks. And this is freeing up staff to focus on higher value work. And then the last one is smart healthcare environments. And I really don't even know what to call this, honestly, but I think it's being able to create facilities that are increasingly integrated with the mission of healing. And I guess what I'm talking about here, Brian, is this whole idea of like AI infused design and eventually generative design. We're moving forward with the ability to predict outcomes based on design decisions. And to me, that's super, super exciting.
I've been waiting to do this episode with you because I'm a futurist and I love hearing this stuff. And you had kind of talked about it a little bit during our board retreat this year. I'm just going to hop around to some different things. So yeah, let's talk about the biology technology convergence. What's that impact on the market?
You are starting this thing out with some serious heavy questions.
I like throwing the fastballs, you know.
Hopefully I can hit a few of these. I guess I would just say it's no secret that there's a convergence of biology and technology, and it's reshaping healthcare. And let me just say, there's like this whole idea of merging man and machine, and some of it I struggle with a little bit, to be honest. But I think the important points are that, you know, there's wearables and implantable technology. Yep. And Brian, I know you well enough to know that you probably have something on your wrist.
Yep.
What is that?
It's the Apple Watch Ultra. You are correct. Telling me every metric possible.
Yeah. So what is it reading right now?
Right now, just on my screen, it's a lot of the outdoor type stuff, right? So temperature high and low, the UV index, the current weather conditions. I've got, and I know you would like this, maybe this is turning into an Apple promotion, but
yeah, right.
When you go swimming in the ocean, it'll tell you the ocean temperature and your depth and everything. So I know you as a surfer would enjoy that, but you know, it can track my medication. It can tell me what time of day to take medication, or my workouts are tracked, you know, how hard was the workout, what your blood pressure, you know, your beats per minute and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
spot on.
It's essentially a medical device, you know,
yeah,
in some ways, right?
Yeah.
And just kind of taking that step, one step further, implantable technologies or sensors that are embedded into your body, providing this continuous and precise data on health metrics. So same idea. And you ask the question, like, why would anyone ever do that? And
yeah,
I think the analogy that's interesting to me is imagine driving a car without sensors. No alerts to warn you of anything that's failing until it actually breaks.
Right.
We would never do that. And yet we do that with our bodies, and the implantable technology will act like those sensors and kind of enabling early interventions before catastrophic health events occur. So this shift moves care from inpatient settings to outpatient settings to eventually integrating healthcare seamlessly in our everyday lives. And I really think that that's kind of fun. I also wanted to talk about biomarkers and in monitoring systems. And you know, I think some of what even a smartwatch is can do that as well, but it's the ability to continuously monitor biomarkers such as glucose or heart rate. You said your Apple Watch did that, or even cancer related markers. This is really a game changer for wellness tracking, early disease detection, and chronic disease management. And I think that's a big deal as well in terms of kind of a health and moving certain populations back to health. And then finally, I'd like to also just talk about this idea of AI physicians.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine a world where everyone has a personal physician. And this personal physician is available 24/7, regardless of ability to pay, can analyze your complete medical history, your family health data, genetic markers, real-time health metrics. Can you imagine that? And would it matter if it's an AI physician? So this is what we're seeing, that these AI systems can suggest highly personalized treatment plans, identify potential health risks before they arise, and assist in diagnosing complex conditions. This is our future. So one last idea here is this whole personalized medicine delivery. And this is being driven by advances in genomics, biomarkers, computational power, AI. This is fundamentally changing how treatments are developed and delivered. And our facilities will need to adapt to these changes. Absolutely amazing. So this means that particularly for this one, that we'll have to design spaces for point of care manufacturing. For example, produce medications or therapies on site. Infusion centers or surgical suites may also need to evolve to accommodate precision therapies tailored to a patient's unique biology. So you talk about this convergence. It's a game changer, absolute game changer.
And it's starting to feel like what we were told in Back to the Future 2, the future would look like, right? I mean, just all this convergence of technology and data. And I know that can be a little bit scary to some people, but I think the possibilities of treatment and care are just absolutely endless. I'd like to shift to care integration and research a little bit. What do modern or future healthcare centers look like then in your mind? You started to touch on some of the evolving nature of some of these rooms, facilities. What does that look like to you?
Yeah, I think there's that, you know, we already talked about this side of care shift. But what's interesting on the other hand is that the people who are showing up at acute centers are sicker. And so I do think that these centers of excellence where the most acute care happens are going to be more than that. They're going to be hubs for innovation and interdisciplinary collaboration. These future centers of excellence will combine cutting-edge clinical technology and care with ongoing research and education to create this ecosystem of healing, learning, and discovery. So that's really what we're going to see in the future, is a combination of those things. I think there's also going to be, we're going to design spaces for integrated delivery. And that used to mean that, hey, we're going to get a bunch of different specialists in the same building and, you know, essentially have a team-based care. What we're seeing now with technology is those people don't have to be in the same building. They can be remote, and you could have world-class care coming from halfway around the world, weighing in with a team of physicians to help give you the kind of total body care that is necessary. And maybe the last thing is just the infrastructure needs for this. It's interesting. We're doing several large projects as part of BSA. There's a couple billion-dollar projects, and we're starting to talk about, as part of master plans, should we have a data center that sits on the hospital grounds? Because the reality is that the future healthcare centers are going to integrate research, education directly into this care delivery, and this infrastructure is going to be needed to support clinical trials, reams of data analytics, and you know, training for the future healthcare professionals. So I think there's a different integration of this research and education and technology that's going to be needed.
And do you see this going beyond just local, regional, and even a national scope? Do you see this getting bigger than that?
Absolutely. I think the pandemic really taught us that lesson, right? What happens to us globally is important, that we can't just focus on our backyard. It extends to national, to global realm. And the future of healthcare design and care integration is going to need that global view with collaboration and knowledge sharing and innovation. And here's some of how I see this being played out is with collaboration. I think it's going to be important, whether it's pandemics or chronic disease management or advancements in medical technology, that all of those are universal. The future healthcare facilities will need to be designed to enable global collaboration, allowing collaborators or providers, researchers, and educators from different parts of the world to work seamlessly together. I do think that we'll also need facility design for those international partnerships. We don't currently think about that when we design future buildings. So this is more hospitals and research centers of the future will need to accommodate international partnerships. This includes laboratory spaces, telemedicine hubs for cross-border patient consultations, and facilities that host multinational clinical trials. And then I would also say virtual collaboration spaces need to be kind of worked into our thinking. These are going to be central to the global healthcare integration. So the facilities will increasingly incorporate dedicated virtual meeting spaces equipped and advanced with technology for telepresence, 3D visualization, and real-time sharing. And then I talked a little bit about this before, but just the infrastructure that's right. going to be needed to support all of this, that healthcare facilities will need robust infrastructure for knowledge sharing. And this includes data analytics platforms, cloud-based repositories for medical research and patient data, and secure networks that comply with international regulations. This is all super complex stuff, but allows healthcare to not be confined by these geographic borders, which we currently look at. And I would even say things like Starlink and things that are known right now. You know, you think about, is there a place in the world where technology can't reach? I don't think there is.
It's so funny you just mentioned that, and I'm not trying to plug products. We've already done Apple. I guess I'm not trying to plug Starlink, but I actually did switch to Starlink last week. Yes, oh, I did. Wow. And
what's the experience like?
Much faster.
Is that right?
Yes. And it was so strange putting it up. You know, you've got to find a spot where you've got a really good kind of clear view of the sky so you can't have trees just hanging over it. But man, once it's constantly updating, I can take a speed test anytime I want. It tells me if my alignment's off. We've had a lot of high wind. We had snow the first day I put it on. No issues there. But to your point, when I was signing up for it, I noticed you can even get a smaller version that you could take if you're into camping and things like that. And if you can get a clear view of the sky, at least I think it's maybe 120 degrees, something like that, the sky, you could be out in the middle of the desert and have internet access, which to your point is an absolute game changer. You're not talking about all these hardwired cables that are just laying everywhere. So it's very interesting.
We'll have to talk some more about that.
Yeah. I've heard you talk about a shift in the focus in the future. Can you explain what that shift might look like?
Yeah. You know, I think the piece that's really fascinating to me is everyone keeps talking about shifting from sickness to wellness. So I think that seems to be coming more and more true all the time. The reality is the future of healthcare is rooted in wellness rather than treatment. So facilities need to be designed to not only address those acute medical needs, but also to proactively support prevention and overall well-being. And I say facilities, but really it's kind of the technology piece that we're talking about here.
Right.
Like, how does that extend care so that, as I said earlier, healthcare becomes a part of us and not just something that we go to in our daily lives? I think the other piece that seems to be out there and in talking, and we keep talking about it with different terms, I think it relates really well to wellness is the sustainability and resilience piece. And I think the change that we're seeing is that those are no longer an afterthought, but it's core to this priority of designing our facilities to contribute to healthier environments while remaining resilient in the face of challenges. And I think that's a pretty exciting change, as you know, we're essentially kind of taking the same oath in a way that our care providers do, which is do no harm.
Right.
We've been talking about this for years and years and years, but I think it continually kind of evolves to greater and greater things so that it's now incorporating sustainability into that. So I do think the big shift there is just being proactive agents of health and wellness, and I'm excited about that.
You mentioned it earlier, and I've had that rolling around in my head. You were talking about your car and everything, and I think of my oldest son has a 1994 pickup truck, right? And he's young. He's just starting out. He's post-college, first year out of college. And so he's got what he can afford, and that's great. I have had the ability to get something, let's say, newer, quite a bit newer, which is running on software. But, you know, just thinking of our phones, our vehicles, and things like that. It's the shift from reactive care, whether that's yourself as your body or your computer or your vehicle, to proactive care. It can tell you ahead of time, like, hey, this is off. I mean, I'm not a car guy. Like, I can't go in there and fix things myself, but I'll tell you, it's pretty nice when it tells me that my PSI and my left rear tire is dropped in the middle of the winter. And hey, just stop and throw some air in it, or this needs service or something like that. So this makes a lot of sense in just that mind shift of kind of proactive versus reactive.
100%. And I think you would never treat your car, well, maybe your sunlight.
Maybe you would. He has no ability to do that, right? Now, he is a fixer. And he's, you know, gotten on YouTube and figured out how to, like, his window wouldn't go down. So he got on YouTube and figured out how to fix all that. The time and the resources of his time and his money that he has to spend doing that. We live in a very fast paced environment, and I know people want to take care of themselves, but it's easier when you have these kind of, not real, sometimes they're real sensor, these things that are triggering.
Sure.
That's why I've got the Apple Watch, right? I like to know what's going on.
Absolutely. I think, I mean, back to that analogy just for a minute, I think in the old days, we used to just drive our cars and essentially till they would hit a catastrophic event.
Correct.
You know? And I was always taught this, to change your oil.
Yep.
You know, but there could be other things going on in your car that are without those sensors, are, you could be harming your car. And I think it's very similar with the body is,
yeah,
like, is there a way to get to a point where ethically we can have implantables or wearables or whatever it is that really start to tell us when and predict somewhat with AI, predict when there's something in our health history that we should know that, hey, here's these certain markers that if they start to align in these ways, it's time to get some proactive care, and let's catch it a long time before it gets to a point where, hey, you got 4 months to live or whatever it is.
Well, that's a great point. All right, I'm going to shift to something that I love to talk about, and I don't think I can do an episode about the future world we don't talk about AI. You've touched on a couple of different things related to AI and artificial intelligence. So let's look at that for a moment. How does AI continue to integrate into the healthcare space of the future?
Yeah. So I had the opportunity this last year to work with the American College of Healthcare Architects. They had put together a think tank, and they were exploring this idea of AI and its impact on health facilities and planning. And not to steal their thunder at all, because I'm super excited that the report should be published in 2025. We have drafts that are out there right now, but I wanted to just maybe outline a couple ideas here.
Yeah.
And one is, kind of the back to this idea of technology infrastructure, AI's impact starts with the need for advanced infrastructure to support its capabilities. And so we're seeing that need already start to show up in accommodating predictive analytics systems. So these are healthcare facilities will increasingly incorporate these predictive analytic models powered by AI to anticipate patient needs, optimize staffing, manage resources. And this requires space. Space is designed to support real-time data collection, analysis, and responses, essentially creating kind of a nerve center. And that's, we touched on that earlier, but I think that predictive nature is really going to be one of the amazing things that comes out of it. The other thing is that it's accelerating research by analyzing vast data sets. And we all know that that's something that AI does really well, taking these big data sets, running simulations, even identifying potential drug candidates. So future healthcare facilities will need dedicated research hubs with AI-enabled labs to support rapid innovations in treatment and diagnostics. And then design for AI treatment delivery, AI-assisted treatment delivery. I think we all know about the robotic surgeries.
Yeah.
I guess we're going to see more of that, maybe in different ways. There are AI-driven treatment options, and they're already emerging. They're already part of our care. So facilities are going to need to accommodate the equipment and the training and the workflows these technologies require, with a focus to ensure seamless integration into the care models. So I think that's a couple of ideas there on AI. It's just kind of understanding that research kind of goes to a different level, and it's going to be incorporated to be a part of this driver of the transformation of healthcare.
Yeah, the integration piece, if you can't tell, I know you can because you've been around me long enough, but for our listeners, I love analogies. And I'm thinking of just the shift in the last, 5 to 10 years on speed of delivery. For example, we were doing something the other night and a light bulb went out, and looked up the light bulb, and Amazon had it to us by 4 a.m. the next morning. Within hours, the replacement bulb was here. So I'm thinking too of healthcare, if you've identified something, it's how do you get that treatment? How fast can you get that treatment? How fast can you get that medicine? And what it feels like is this AI is helping us blend together is almost like this super glue or this conduit, if you will, of ways to get information faster, treatment options faster. To your point, maybe it's wellness. If I'm living somewhere and I should only be eating a certain type of food based off the type of sickness that I might have, how quickly can I get that? Am I healthy enough to get to the store? So it's all very, very fascinating.
Yeah, and I think, again, you're 100% on task with that. It is completely changing our ability to get a treatment plan that maybe, again, you hear some of these cases where people in different countries have something, and basically the ability to be analyzed by a doctor comes back to that doctor's ability or exposure to particular diagnostic. So I think from that standpoint of just understanding that there's a larger data set that's beyond a single doctor, and being able to crunch that information to a point where somebody could get a diagnosis that would never be possible without AI. I think that's one piece that's really interesting. I do think that there are also the ability to bring treatments like certain drugs to the market, even personalized medicine to the market much, much quicker is going to be something that is going to be possible with AI.
Well, we've covered a lot of different things. I'm going to wrap up with my last question and ask you, as we know, the future is not going to be without challenges and opportunities. It's also impossible to predict. So I'm not holding you to any of this. If we come back a year from now, it's not going to be a how many did he get right or wrong. But with that said, what are in your mind a couple challenges and opportunities that you see from the healing side in the future?
Yeah, I think predicting the future is really a huge challenge. And we have seen things emerge that we didn't foresee. So I'm going to do my best to look at the crystal ball here and just maybe talk about some key trends and factors that are shaping both opportunities and challenges on the healing side. So let's start with challenges. I think that economic factors are really the biggest challenge. And we've been talking about this for a while. It's like, how do you create new payment models? And there's been a lot of talk around value-based care and other alternative payment models instead of volume-based care. So healthcare facilities will need to align with their design with a focus on outcomes rather than volumes. And I think that's a huge thing. So this could mean like optimized or for preventive care, chronic disease management, wellness. But I see a shift happening there. So that's going to be a challenge until we figure out how to pay for some of those things to make that shift from volume to value. The second one is there's a lot of consolidation happening still in the marketplace. And this presents a challenge in balancing large system efficiencies while maintaining localized and community-focused care. These facilities will need to be designed to support regional hubs while preserving access and connection at the local level.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that right now. There's been some that have predicted that all of the healthcare systems that you see in the U.S. will be consolidated down to 100. That's basically like two per state, right?
And wow.
If you just look at your state there, there's more than two. So, and then the last under economic challenges is just this high acuity versus low acuity space planning, and the shift from or the shift to outpatient or virtual settings. Hospitals will increasingly focus on high acuity patients, and this requires a careful balance in space allocation, ensuring sufficient capacity for critical care while not overbuilding spaces that may become underutilized. So we're going to continue to see those economic challenges that are a part of healthcare. But I think also just maybe looking up on the other side of the coin is the opportunities. And that's, again, where I get excited, because I think there are opportunities around future models. And maybe the one is just more of this idea of a healthy district concept. And the idea that healthy districts can be where healthcare, housing, retail, recreation coexist in a single integrated community, offering tremendous potential. These districts focus on wellness and prevention, enabling healthcare into the fabric of our everyday life and reducing the need for acute care interventions. I would just love to see that dream become reality. The second is maybe in the future model, just more of an outcome-based design, designing facilities with measurable outcomes in mind, whether it's patient recovery rates or staff satisfaction or operational efficiency, allowing for spaces that truly support healing. And by integrating evidence-based design with real-time analytics, I think facilities in the future can continuously adapt to improve outcomes. It's not a static thing, but it's a constant adapting over time. Almost like you were talking about how cars get software updates or whatever. And then finally, under the future model piece is this lifestyle healthcare facility idea, where the rise of lifestyle medicine, emphasizing prevention and wellness, create opportunity to rethink facility design spaces like wellness centers, nutrition clinics, and exercise-focused healthcare facilities will become more prevalent, helping patients manage their health proactively rather than reactively. But, you know, so we got a lot of opportunities there as well as challenges. And the future, you know, undoubtedly will bring new ones, new challenges, and new opportunities, especially around this idea of economic constraints and adapting those shifting care models. However, I do want to say that it presents some exciting opportunities to innovate, which is what keeps your mind going and my mind going, is that there's going to be new ways of looking at this.
That's awesome. Well, thank you once again for joining me. This has been fantastic. I always enjoy having you on the show and talking about things like this. So much appreciated, Tim.
It's always a pleasure. And I get energy out of having these discussions with you, just kind of intellectually riffing. So thanks.
I'd like to thank Tim Spence for joining us on this episode of BSA by Design. You can connect with him on LinkedIn. If you're interested in learning more about BSA, we encourage you to visit our website, bsalifestructures.com. There's a link in the show notes to contact us for more information. Be sure to subscribe to BSA by Design on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube Music so you don't miss an episode. And we've got more content and project stories to share on social media, so be sure to follow us on LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and X. That's going to do it for this episode. Join us again next time on BSA by Design.